Hey, everybody, it's Deshaun K. Terry, and I'm an actor, director, producer, educator, and you are listening to The Actors Lounge.
Hey, guys, and welcome back to an all-new episode of The Actors Lounge. I'm your host, Melanie Victor, and today we have with us a very special guest. Please welcome to the show, actor, director, and educator, Deshaun K. Terry. Hey, Deshaun, how's it going?
What up?
What up?
I'm doing good. Actually today is really good because I think I have like a few hours where I'm not booked out, where I get to do flexible work time, which I always like flexible work time because then that's just sort of like me figuring out what to do. I always have stuff to do, fortunately and unfortunately, but today after this podcast, I have some flexible work time, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah, because I feel like if I could get some flexible work time every day in my day, like, man, that's a gift. I have two little ones, so it's really hard to have any sort of like extra time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. How old are your little ones?
Yeah, so my oldest son, he's 2, and he'll be 3 at the end of this month. And then I have a 6-month-old as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm very busy.
These days, I got to interview you on my podcast and be like, how are you getting all this done with kids?
Oh, I don't know. You know, it's insane. But yeah, like we were talking about before, I just hit 200 episodes. It's been 3 years. Like, it's definitely a labor of love, and I do enjoy it. So I think that's what like helps me to just like make it happen and make it work. But it is a sacrifice because it's a lot of work, because it's just me and my husband that have been really maintaining this podcast for the last 3 years. And it's a lot of work, like editing, artwork, reaching out, everything, you know. It's like, it's a lot, but I do enjoy doing it. So that keeps me going.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I like to say, or something that I don't know who said it, but the harder I work, the luckier I feel.
I've never heard that one before. That's a first.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny because, you know, people have, you know, I'm always interested when people, you know, when someone, you know, knows or has some sense of the things I'm doing, or, you know, how my life can get busy, you know, and I have my hands in a lot of different pots. But, you know, when someone like, you know, I just want to, you know, or they admire, you know, some sense of body of work that I have, it's interesting to me, because they're like, I just want people, you know, it feels as if sometimes people look at it as if, oh, like, things are happening to me, and I'm literally just like, no, nothing is happening to me, I'm generating it.
Yeah. That's a big difference. I'm
generating all of it. And, you know, even the things that sort of come from happenstance, meaning that, you know, it's like one of the things that I say, and I like to talk about the business in general, I like to talk about the business in all aspects of it, I like to talk about the business creatively, and I also just like to talk about the business of the business. You know, one of my philosophies is just sort of like, I am going to do the things that I want to do. So I am currently, at this moment, I am producing something. I am in talks for directing something. I'm acting in something next week. Nice. I am, you know, all of these things are always happening at any given moment. Now, not all of these things are paying me handsomely, right? And the whole idea or the objective for me is, you know, I say, just do it now. Just do it, do it, do it, do it. Yeah. And then eventually all of these things will be paid for handsomely. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not waiting for, oh, it's not a viable thing for me to do if it's not paying me this much. I'm like, no, okay, it's more so about, let me practice the thing that I want to do right now. So let me tell the kind of stories I want to tell right now. You know, like literally a brother just called me to be in a short film thing. And I was like, this looks really legit. I'm, you know, And I was like, yeah, let's collaborate. You know, I'm not doing a movie with Jamie Foxx next week.
Sure, I can do it.
And hopefully, knock on wood, I'm finding some wood, right? It's okay. It's okay.
He's knocking with you.
And hopefully, knock on wood, that those people, those collaborators, will then change. More different people will be like, oh, you know, Steven Spielberg and Antoine Fuqua and all those people. They're gonna be like, hey, we got a project for you. That's always been how it's been going, and so that's my perspective on it.
Yeah, so, it's like you say, like you have one, you have to be open, right? And you have, like you said, you're going to do the things that you want to do, because yeah, a lot of people may like wait, or, oh, I'm an actor, but I would love to be a director too, but I'm going to just wait. Maybe I'll do that later down the line. You're like, no, I'm about to do all the things. Like, I'm going to make it all happen. And like you said, even if it's not like paying you like, you know, a lot of money right now, like that doesn't mean later on down the line, like other opportunities won't come and like doors won't open up, but you have to start somewhere, right?
Yeah. And I literally, when I go through my day, it's not like I prioritize being like, okay, well, they pay me money, so let me take care of this first. Or, well, maybe sometimes a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Let's be real.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I will literally spend, you know, I'm also artistic director of a theater company called Collaborative Artist Block. Mm-hmm. And right now, really what we're focused on is we're really just focused on community dialogues, because it's been very challenging to do productions during COVID. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to, you know, we're trying to figure out ways to achieve our objective without necessarily the way that we were telling stories or talking about stories previously. Mm-hmm. But when I have collaborative artist block stuff to do, I mean, and literally I will go days, maybe weeks, where my literally all my intention is focused on this. I'm not getting paid to do cab work, but it's the vision that I see, and it's the vision that I see that I want to see in the world. Mm-hmm. And I will literally, you know, delay doing other things that, you know, theoretically should be money, and I don't feel a difference. Like, I don't feel a difference, like, oh, well, now I'm really doing something that, and this legitimizes me. Yeah. In comparison to, you know, what legitimizes me is the mission. Mm-hmm. The mission of what I'm trying to do and how everything connects to that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no, that's important. And I feel that's the way a lot of people miss out on, you know, opportunities, because their mind is kind of closed to it. You know, they're like, oh, it's a small thing, or it's not, you know, paying a lot. But it's like, you just never know what you can get from any and every opportunity. You never know like how you can be fulfilled, or like, you know, where it can lead. So I'm always with that same mindset of just like being open to collaborate, open to work. And I watched this interview that you did a couple months ago, and you were talking about how when you started focusing on the stories that you want to tell rather than just booking or like, you know, getting the job, that's when you saw a shift and you started attracting the work that you wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. You know, cause I really, you know, sometimes I get self-conscious because I feel like I sound like too esoteric or hippie-ish. And that's not me at all. Like, I'm such a pragmatic person. It makes no sense. But pragmatically, and I'm saying this in a pragmatic way, like, mm-hmm. this is not some, you know, hippy dippy feeling thing.
Yeah.
Love is the most powerful mm-hmm. emotion we have on the planet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it courses through our bodies. And when you meet someone who is in love, right, in love with, because you know that happens also, like when you just see somebody walk by, or, you know, it's happened to me, the moments when I was deepest in love in life, and I'm talking romantic love, mm-hmm. people are like, oh my god, you're just like smiling, you're just like, well, like, I want to come around you, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just like that, but it's also just sort of like, be in love with your work, be in love with your day.
Yeah.
And so if you are literally working on the things that impassion you, that, you know, hold on a second, I'm gonna pause, because okay. Are you hearing any of this?
Yeah, I heard the bark.
Okay, just the bark. Okay.
Yeah, just the bark.
You ain't heard the other stuff.
No, I hear nothing else. I don't know what else is going on over there.
But yeah, but literally, so because then that love courses through your body, and then when you go into the meeting to meet the people, whether it be an audition or you just having that sort of sit down interview thing, you want to be around that energy. You want to be contagious in that energy. In comparison to the years where I restricted and obligated myself to that waiting wait that waitering job, I don't know why I decided I needed to punish myself for so long, but that was a decision that I made. You know, and what was going through my body when people would meet me was like, I fuck, can I curse on this thing?
Hey, be free. Do you?
Okay, great. You know, what was going through my body was like, I fucking hate this job. And so that's what people were meeting. And people aren't, you know, people don't want to be as much around that. And it's not about being fake. It's about being authentic. And real for me, that was a big shift. Like, I remember the moment, and I'm talking about this because, you know, to distill any sort of myth of like, oh, you know, you have a show, you're on a show, or you're, it's like, get rid of all of it. Like, I remember the specific moment when, and I was talking about this last night, when my manager from the restaurant called me and was like, hey, you know, we're opening back up, because they had shut down for a little bit, thank God.
Lucky
Because
you.
it was just enough time for me to catch my senses. When they had shut down for a little while, and he called me back, he's like, "Hey, we're opening back the restaurant. You know, do you want to come back?" And I was like, "No, I think I'm gonna find some different problems," and which is what I had to do. I
Some
did. I was,
different problems.
yeah, because it wasn't like I was like, "Oh no, I've booked a job and I can't do it." No, I had no idea what I was gonna do. I had no idea how I was gonna pay my bills, but I knew that this problem wasn't the one for me, and I didn't want to engage in it. And so I was like, let me find different problems. And those different problems led to you know, solutions that I wanted.
That's empowering, you know, because for you to be in a position to make that decision, because a lot of people will probably be fearful, you know, like I have to do this or I need to do this. Like you said, you didn't know. Like you still had to pay your bills, but you know, there wasn't like anything there in front. There wasn't another offer, but you made the decision to be like, no, I'm gonna go a different path. I think that's so empowering to be in that position, that mindset.
Yeah, it's what we tell ourselves. We tell ourselves so much, and you know, I think I 100% believe that. I mean, I'm capable of doing so many things. Like I'm not a I try not to be a braggadocious person, but you know, but this isn't even just about me. I'm just talking about humanity. I'm talking about who, and specifically actors and artists, like, you know, the level of creativity that we function in. There's so many things that we can do and we're capable of. And so choosing to say, oh, but I can only make my living by waiting tables, that's your choice and point of view. Cover that the hard way.
And that mindset is so limiting. It is so limiting. And it's like that doesn't have to be the reality. Like you said, you decide, you choose the path that you're gonna take.
100.
I love it. I love it. So let's kind of go back a little bit, because you know, you've been on this journey, I'm assuming, for a while now as an actor, director, educator. Take us a little bit, you know, to the beginning. Like, how did you get your start? Like, where did your journey with acting, like, where did that all start?
So it all started when my mom was trying to get me out the house. So,
Sending you away.
yeah, so she sent me to an acting school down in South Central where I grew up, called Faith Acting Studios. And I always talk about Faith Acting Studios. Faith Acting Studios is such an important part of my life. It's where I started to discover my voice. It's where I started to fell in love with acting. And it's also, I think it was such a transformative part of my life in so many ways, not just in the art, but even collaborative artist block, you know, is really inspired by Faith Acting Studios, because I often think to myself, well, what would have happened if I never went to that acting school down on Crenshaw and Stocker? And I want there to be more acting schools down on Crenshaw and Stocker. I want there to be more theaters on Crenshaw and Stocker and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard and all that stuff. So that's where I first fell in love with the craft, and then I went to college out here at Loyola Marymount University. That's my first alma mater, and I studied, after running away from it for a little bit, I studied theater. And then when I was graduating from school, I realized, I just had an insight that I was like, you know what, I want more training. Even though I was in Los Angeles, I really fell in love with plays, and I fell in love with like Ntozake Shange and George C. Wolfe and James Baldwin, and just doing those plays and saying those words, and just fell in love with Black theater in general. And I realized, I was like, you know, I want to do more of that. I want to study more. And someone approached me and recommended to me that I auditioned for Juilliard. And at that time, I was like, what? That I thought it was just a school on Save the Last Dance. Oh, that's a real
Yes, right?
thing. Yeah. Like that's really where my mindset was, which is also just so important, why, we gotta share and talk about our experiences and tell our journeys so that it inspires other people. And so when I found that out, I did. I went and I auditioned for Juilliard. I auditioned for, all the grad schools at that time, and went on this whole journey. And I was fortunate and blessed that I got into the schools. I got into Juilliard, NYU, Yale, all that stuff. I felt big
Wow,
a little
that's
bit.
let's have a moment, okay? Because that's a big accomplishment. That's huge.
It was, I didn't expect that. I didn't expect that, but I was like, oh wow, they really do, they okay, there's a place for me.
Dang. So you had to choose, basically,
I had to,
pick.
yeah, I had to choose. I had to choose between the three of them, and I decided to go with Juilliard, because they gave me a full scholarship.
Oh man, of course we're going with Juilliard.
Oh yeah, give me the money.
Yeah, of course. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and actually, again, just to this spill all the myths, that's that uncommon of an experience at with Juilliard. They if they accept you, because people say that to me all the time, they're like, I want to go to a school like that, but I can't afford it. Typically, the way that it goes is that if they let you into that program, they want to make sure, thousands of people apply. And if they let you in, they're gonna fight to make you take the program. That's one thing, good thing about that's one good thing about Juilliard. So yeah, then I did that, and at that point in time in my head, I was like, oh yeah, I'm a New York person. Like I'm so a New York Broadway baby. Like that's where I was headed all this time. It makes so much sense. And then I experienced the weather.
You started singing a different tune then.
Oh yeah, the East Coast weather. I remember when I got out of
Man.
school and I was sitting down with these Asians. I sat down with this one Asian, and the meeting went terribly. It was a terrible meeting.
Why was it
Like
so terrible? What happened?
we were just very different people. Like I told them, I said, I was like, yeah, I love the weather in on the West Coast. Like I'm a sunshine guy. Like I grew up in Central America. I was born in Belize City, Belize, lived in but I've lived in Los Angeles since I was 10. So I've always been in just temperate climates. And I was just like, yeah, I just love the West Coast. And she looked at me and she was like, yeah, no, I don't get that.
That fell flat.
Yeah, she was like, yeah, no, I like cold weather. It like it makes me
Just
feel alive.
what? I have never in my life heard anybody say that. That's
I
insane.
yeah like I hadn't heard that either. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's so like cold. Like, where do you go from there? It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I was like, well, we're not gonna get along.
Right. Completely opposite. That's funny.
Yeah, so I that's what I had done. I had envisioned a life like that. And truth be told, when you come out of school, because people are always, wanting to figure out which route they want to go. Do I want to go the route of just like hitting the pavement and just start auditioning as an actor, or do I want to go the grad school route? And then once you get out of school, everyone goes through the dreadful question, where are you gonna go? Am I gonna do New York or am I gonna do Los Angeles? And it's such a crisis for everybody and how they make their decision. And I decided to come back to LA. I started working in New York. Immediately I was cast in a off-Broadway play, and I decided to come back to LA. And I decided to come back to LA even though I was being told that I was supposed to be in New York. That's what I was supposed to do, because theater was people felt like I would work faster in theater, which was probably true. So I'm not disagreeing with that. However, I knew that I would be happier in Los Angeles.
It's a different lifestyle, like completely.
Yeah. So I decided to go where I'd be happy, to look at life more holistically than just work. And I also felt like, whatever is gonna happen, I'm gonna make it work. And eventually I did. So then, yeah. And is that does that bring us today? No.
That is current. Yeah, no, that gives me a full like visual of kind of like how you started and like now where you're at today. So I want to know a little bit about your experience at Juilliard. Like, what was that like for you?
Well, here's the thing with Juilliard, and you're asking this at a such an important, such an interesting moment in Juilliard's life, because have you heard of the whole Slavery Saturday thing, right?
No, I have not. You have to enlighten
Okay.
me.
Okay, well, I'm not going to go too much into it because we can't.
Oh, but I need to have some context, so you'll give me
Yeah, I will
something.
give you context. But here's what we're dealing with, and it's not just Juilliard. So I'm gonna broaden the conversation a little bit. So, and also this is an important conversation for me as an educator, because especially after this year of COVID, the question that we're dealing with is, how do we decolonize arts education, right? How do we work against what is systematic, been implanted in, at least I'll just speak for myself, has been implanted in my brain, and it's been difficult as a man of color to see myself at the center of the narrative. As we are fed narratives where black and brown people are in the periphery, right? So, because every time, and Juilliard being one of them, these institutions which really work from a colonized perspective in terms of arts education. We are not studying black writers. We are not studying brown. We are not, I mean, literally, and my classmates from Juilliard and everyone at Juilliard needs to understand that for the most part, 90% of the time, when you ask me to get up and do my work in front of you, you are asking me to take on the words of white writers. You are asking me to personalize the words of characters that are written Anglo, white. And I then am somehow supposed to do it as enlightening as you. And it's like, I'm at a disadvantage here, right? So that's a colonized arts education experience. And how are we going to decolonize arts education? Of course, there's things that we know. You got to get more writers. You got to have words written by black people for black people, words written by brown people for brown people, and stop. But even in terms of the aesthetic, and Juilliard is so guilty of this, because the aesthetic of what they think is an amazing actor comes from a colonized perspective, and it's a very white, and it's a very distancing aesthetic for black and brown people. So historically at Juilliard, black and brown people, we have had a very, very difficult time in that program. With that said, growing up in Belize really sort of changes my experience to from everyone else's, because I grew up in a third world country.
For sure.
I grew up in
No, I was gonna
abject
say
poverty.
my mom and everyone on her side of the family is from Kingston, Jamaica. So,
And it changes everything. And it changes everything because part of, how I was actually able to make it through the really tough times in my life, was I had to tell myself and I had to remind myself, Deshaun, you are one of the most fortunate people on the face of this planet. When you look at it globally, right? I made it out of Belize, and you know, and there's a lot of the people that I grew up with did not make it out of Belize.
Yeah.
Did not.
Yeah.
You know, the crime, the death rate, all that stuff, all of that is important for me to always think about when I go through struggles, to remind myself how fortunate I am.
Yeah.
And if I'm not able to be happy being one of the most fortunate people on the face of the planet, then I just feel like it's over.
Yeah, no, it's so true. Like, it puts everything in perspective. Like you said, like when you're, you know, when you've gone through challenges or going through things, like having that be the top of the mind, like looking back at all the amazing opportunities you've had, or just being able to have a career as a working actor. I mean, it's almost a privilege, you know what I mean? Like, because like I just feel like not everybody, like you said, you're from a third world country, you know, like those opportunities just aren't, that's not reality for a lot of people, you know, from those places. So having that in at the forefront of your mind, I'm sure it helps you to just be a lot, like, lead with gratitude in your life.
Yeah, and it's also, and it's because it's two things. It's also, and I'm learning this, I think part of the reason I'm even talking about it is that I'm learning this even now. And I think I'm crafting a way to deal with it even more so now, is sort of, how do I deal with the disadvantages of my situation and also embrace and be in gratitude, because I am still one of the most fortunate people on the face of the planet, and I will never change that.
Yeah,
I will never be, right? But at the same time, I can't not see when shit is unfair.
Yeah.
I can't not see when I am treated unfairly, when I'm treated different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this constant struggle. And it's even today, you know, when you show up to work, wherever you're working, how am I able to keep sort of like this holistic sense of things, to change things for the future, but at the same time, don't crumble into my problems.
Yeah. Or like just get too tainted, you know, that you can't even see past the problems. Like, cause like, that's why I was wondering, you know, just what your experience was at Juilliard, because, you know, a lot of the institutions, like it doesn't really, like, I've heard it too, cause I've talked to a lot of actors who have went to school for theater. And a lot of them say the same thing. Like, you know, it's not geared toward, it's not for us. Like, our stories aren't being told. Like, it's very shaped from like a white perspective. Like, that's just what it is. So, you know, everyone has their different experiences. So I was just curious, you know, what that was like for you as a black man, you know, just say it plainly.
So I think that's sort of like, you know, the thing that I, you know, felt like me going through the Juilliard experience was to, you know, see and recognize it for what it is, but then also trying to elevate and to suss out the things that were, you know, suss out the great things about it, right? Because here I am, I came from far to be here, to make it here. And there are so many people who are like, I would love to, you know, be in those shoes and appreciate and study with those people. So it's a dual experience. It's an experience of like seeing, you know, collaborating with all these great artists, these amazing teachers. But it was also set the groundwork to be a black actor in this industry, which I think in general is an industry that is far behind. It is an industry where what happened at Juilliard happens in all of our stories. We are not placed at the center of the narrative, and that's the system that we are working in right now. And that system needs to be changed, and I think Juilliard needs to be changed. But at the same time, I did not succumb to it. I did not succumb, because you will not win.
That's true.
So in So in all of its difficulty, it didn't break me. And I
Yeah.
say that because sometimes actors come out of Juilliard and they have been broken.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah,
That's
for
really
real, real
interesting.
talk.
Yeah.
Real talk. Sometimes it can break you. It
Wow.
can break you. I remember when I was I remember at the when we graduated and we had like the alumni events, right? People sit around the table, blah, 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 and you know, and you're meeting all these alumni from like group, I don't know, because we all have group numbers. So I'm group 33. The program has only been in existence for under 60 years, so I don't even think they've gotten to group 60 yet. So I'm group 33, and you know, I remember at the alumni table when you're now an alumni. There was a couple, one or two people at the table who were talking about their Juilliard experience, and they weren't even necessarily black. This is the white folks too, because they get broken by the program as well. But they were still harping on what happened in this person's class, and I said to myself, "I am not going to be here."
Man, like, I can only imagine, you know? I mean, well, yeah, I can only imagine because I've never experienced it, but I'm just thinking, like, what that experience would be like. And like you said, some people get broken. Is it because, like, is everything, is it more indirect? And it's just like the undertones, like nothing's like super direct, but is it just like, you know, just indirect type of like indirect behaviors or
Well, here's what I'll say. We'll start off with this. Sort of like, what in my first year, I'm a shy person. I'm introverted. Whether people are aware of it or not, I am an introverted person. I recharge by myself.
Whew, you and me both.
Yeah. And so I was told by my first year instructor when we were doing, and I was feeling him. I thought he was great. I was like, "Oh man, you're the shit. Like I love studying with you, blah blah blah." I thought we had a great relationship. And then I was blindsided when I sat down for my evaluation, right? It was what they do. I think that's what or it's critique, maybe that's what they call it. And I sit down with him and this dude kind of like just slaps me from like a whole different direction. And he tells me, he was like, he tells me I'm arrogant. He tells me, and a bunch of things that I've forgotten because I didn't process it. But ultimately what it came down to this, what he felt was, and you know, and other people said in different words, was basically in my silence, it felt threatening to them. So they didn't have a concept. So it's like basically when I look back on it, I'm realizing, oh, I'm supposed to make them feel safe at the same time as their student. I'm in your space where you have the power, but I guess I need to be you know, all up in your face smiling 24/7
That's
seven
crazy.
for whatever that is, because my silence as a dark-skinned man, for
Yeah.
some, that resonated with you in some ways that you didn't think to yourself, oh, he's just shy.
Right.
Oh no,
Like,
he's yeah.
yeah.
And he literally then pointed me to one of the white girls in the class. Literally, I'm not kidding you, Mel, at all, and said, compared me to one of the white girls in the class who was quote unquote the star of the class, and said, comparatively, she's wonderful to work with.
Wow, the audacity.
Yeah.
That's insane.
I forgot the words that he used to describe her, but there was basically he was saying that she is I don't know, I feel like I need to figure out what word he used. I remembered it for a few years, but now I've forgotten it. But he was basically saying that she was soft and just like easier for him to deal with or work with. And we had never had a blow up or anything like that. So understand, like I know, 'cause people then would go like, "Well, did you have a difficult time working with him on a scene or something?"
Yeah, I'm like,
No.
where is this even coming from?
None of that. I hadn't even like we didn't even really know each other. Like there
That's
was no
crazy. That's
like I know
wild.
when I can't. I know when I go off. I remember, because I remember when when the beast comes out, and I'm like, "Oh, Deshaun, you were out of pocket." Like, I know when I did that to that guy at Target that time.
Where's the video footage?
But so it wasn't anything like that. It was literally, and it was the way I behaved in that room, the way that I behaved in every other room that I had been in as a theater artist, as a young theater artist, soaking up knowledge to the point that every other teacher that I worked with, from Faith Acting Studios to Loyola Marymount University, they were in championing of me growing and say, "Hey, let me give you my resources to help you get into this program." So I behaved no differently in that room, except I was probably a bit more intimidated in that room. So I know my experience. My experience was I was intimidated by being at Juilliard, and so I silenced myself a bit, but my silence was perceived as threatening. And so yeah, so if
That's
it, and though
unfortunate.
and that's a common thing. People get critiques like that. So they don't and ultimately now, joking about it, but what that is, that's anti-blackness. That's saying the way that we live in the space, it's not catered for us. You want me to live in the space like a white girl?
Right. Pretty much. That's basically what he said.
Yeah.
That's
So
insane.
that's, things like that are, I think, are, unconscious bias is pervasive in the program. There's some things that are very much so conscious bias that is in the program. And to go back to sort of what we were talking about, so recently in the news, there's a thing called Slavery Saturday that happened in the Juilliard experience, where a young woman by Marion Gray and a bunch of classmates. They, we don't know exactly how this all came to be, but in essentially what happened is that something just went completely wrong, and they did an imaginative exercise, and in the exercise they took the whole class on a journey of experiencing slavery and coming back out of it. And this woman, she said that she was traumatized by this. And I think multiple people were traumatized by this exercise. They weren't expecting it, and they did not feel safe in it. But what's happening is that a bunch of the Black alumni, we're finally starting a Juilliard Black Alumni Association so that we can really, have a stronger. Now there's so many of us. The program has been there for 60 years. At first, there was no Black people there, but now there's so many of us have graduated and we've gone through the challenges of being there. So we're working on that. How do we decolonize this space and make it safer for the people who are coming after us?
That's so interesting. So what advice just to actors that are listening that, are studying at these theater programs, in school institutions, like, and they are experiencing, like, these indirect, subtle, experiences, like, since you've been through Juilliard and program and had your own experience, like, what advice do you give to other Black actors who are experiencing that?
Here's the advice, and it's something that I had to learn. It's a slow trickle, me learning. It's a really like drip by drip by drip by drip by drip, and to sort of like fully coming to, not even fully, because I'm certain I'm gonna get some more drips the next job. But I have a little bit, sense of time. And I think if someone had said to me, because I grew up, and it'll be interesting, sort of like what happens with people now, because I grew up in the quote unquote post-racial America, right? So that was the myth that was being told to us in classes, like, skin color doesn't count, right? That myth, it's hard to hold up now, especially after we've been through COVID. So I hope that Black and Brown folks will understand, that this anything concerning post-racial America is bullshit, right? And so here's the advice, or the thing I want people to think about, is that when we look at, the civil rights movement, and we think about people like Rosa Parks and Sojourner Truth and Malcolm X, and we look at them as paving the way so that we are able to achieve and live in some of the blessings that we live in now, right? When we look at those people, though we are talking about art, so we don't, you know, sometimes we don't have infrastructure, right? We don't have infrastructure to hold on to. What do you mean? I'm allowed to go into this room. We're not talking segregation here, right? We're talking microaggressions and, you know, culturally rooms just not suited for us. So it's a little bit, it's more invisible. It's not as tangible, right? But it's there because you're seeing it and you're feeling it, right? You know what it is to go into the hair and makeup trailer and it's not set up for you, right? So whether you're in a training program or you are working, the really reality of it is we are the trailblazers. We are creating roads for people that are coming after us. So even in those training programs, it is so unfortunate because I think as vulnerable artists, we want to be in a space to be held. And we deserve to be in a space to be held. But right now, where America is, where storytelling is, where this industry is, we have to create the path for the thing and the injustices that we see within the space. So it requires for us to be more aware, right? To hopefully be able to process what you need. And also develop the ability to communicate and talk to others about here's why this space is not inviting for people like me and not put. So basically, I'm saying we got it's hard work. So in those programs, don't fall for the myth or feel like there's something wrong with you because you feel that you're not being seen or you're not being heard, right? That's probably what it's probably happening, right? And you got to do the hard work of really evaluating and disseminating the space and you know how you fit into it. So it's just we just have to do more work, and we have to do more work because that's the only way we're going to fix it for generations to come. And I think I walked into it from post-racial America thinking, oh yeah, we're all going to be fine and this is going to be. And then when the microaggressions were hitting me, it was I don't know where the energy went, but maybe it just went into trauma or however it goes. But now I know better to sort of like, you know, if I'm in a program or if I'm in a space or any sort of environment that I'm in, that I am there to first, you know, do what I'm supposed to be to do. But I also need to figure out a way how to change the space for the better, just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Because it's that, like you said, over the years, it's been a slow drip of learning for you of how to deal with it. So it's gonna be a slow drip of change. Like if the next person could do something to educate that space, you know, that's gonna help for the next person who comes in. Then they're gonna do a little more educating. And then it's like you just keep educating. But we have to be educated in a way of like how to communicate that and like to be aware. Like you said, you have to be aware that it's actually happening, you know?
And I think if you walk into it as we want to, and I understand it, that we want to just sort of like, I just want to have what my white counterparts have in everything, and you should. But then when it happens, when something goes awry, then it's like you can't do your work because you were living in this sort of myth, and then all of a sudden you're like, no, this is what it is. So it's like we just have to understand that. To be in this industry as a black person, a brown person, a Native American person, like how, well, whatever you are, whether you want it or not, you're a change maker. It's part of
That's
the job.
yeah. And you have to like you said, whether you want it or not, like you just have to own that and you have to know that and walk with that sort of like quiet confidence, knowing that that is what we do.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Don't, and it'll be interesting how you be a change maker, right? Because you don't, because it's also you want to create a supportive work environment to get the job done, but also that's sort of like an additional task that you have. You're a change maker.
It's so interesting. This is it's kind of it's like not related to acting, but it's like similar. Me and my husband, we talk about it. Like when my son, my 2-year-old, is playing on the playground, because we have like a play structure where we live. And there's like a lot of, little white girls running around, and him, and he's like chasing them and things like that. And some, I can just tell, like, some of the girls, they're just kind of have like this energy towards him sometimes. And we talk about it, and we're just like, I know it's because he's a little black boy. You know what I mean? And I don't know what their parents are teaching them and what they're saying behind closed doors, but I can just tell, like, it's just like a little energy. You can see it, and you see it at such a young age, And my husband was like, yeah, like, I just wonder if it was like a little white boy running around. Like, it would be seen as, oh, he's just playing, but like my son, it's like he's running around. He thinks he's a dinosaur, so he's always running around, roar, But it's like I always just internally just have this feeling of like, like I don't want people looking at him as if like, yeah, he's aggressive, or he's, this little black boy. But this is, like you said, it's the reality, and it's like just knowing how to deal with it, knowing how to educate him to deal with that as he grows up. But it's just interesting watching it like at such a small level, just like in children.
Yeah, and it's the experience, right? It is that
Yeah, it is.
experience. It's like, something that, we have to be aware of, get a sense of how we're being seen, which isn't unfair, but it is something that, I think we all have to learn how to navigate in.
Yeah, it's true. And I'm learning how to just do it like as a parent, and that's just like, it's scary, 'cause the parent of black boys, like, that's a responsibility. Like, you have to be able to communicate with them, and make sure you're educating them in the right way, because and letting them know, like, yeah, you're going to be perceived in a different way. Like, just how your teacher is like, you're coming off like aggressive, or something's wrong with you, but really you're like, no, like, I'm going through my own stuff, and it has nothing to do with it. Just because I'm not talking and like all up in your face doesn't mean like I'm not even doing anything, and it's just like we just get judged differently all the time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wanna?
Oh, wow, that's,
Okay, well, we just went down. Whew.
I know. It's such a great conversation. So important too, though. Like, it really is. Like, I didn't know anything about slavery. What is a Saturday? Slavery Saturday?
Slavery
I've
Saturday.
never
Yeah,
heard of that.
there's a lot of stuff on it. I would definitely do a little Googling on it
Oh,
and
I
check it
would.
out. Yeah, Marion's very, her story is very powerful. She did an Instagram post. And so, we're trying to, do what we can as the alumni to try and, change the space in whichever way we can.
Yeah,
So.
no, that's important. Well, thanks for enlightening me on that. Yeah,
Of course.
very
Okay,
interesting.
no more Juilliard talk.
I
All right.
know. Okay, so
Talk
I will
about
let's talk about, you are a series regular on Apple TV's The Morning Show, right? Yeah, so let's talk about the show. Can you tell us a little bit about the show and the character that you do play?
So the morning show is it's a television show about a what it is, the morning show. So, like, think of, the Good Morning America and the people involved in front of the camera and behind the camera in that show. What's so great about the show is one of the things that's so great about the show is that we talk about what's happening in America. And first season, the show is led by amazing Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon, and Steve Carell. They're the leads of the show, and I play one of the anchors. I play the character of Daniel Henderson. And so one of the cool things about the show is that, we talk about what's happening in America. The first season, we were really hot in talking about Me Too. And so second season, which is not released as of yet, but we finished shooting it. It will be out shortly. I don't know when. Second season, I can't say too much about it, but it's already in the press, and they've already let people know that second season will talk about COVID.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting ride. I can't wait for people to see second season. And this was my first series regular.
Yeah, I was gonna ask that. Is this your first series regular?
Yeah, it's
Wow.
series regular. And it's always interesting to me, sort of like where I've found through the years that certain people in their career that you get sort of, there's all these different sort of tiers or things to get, right? So first you gotta, get your craft game together, right? And then once you get your craft game together, you gotta get your co-stars and your guest stars and your recurrings and then your series regular. And I've seen so many people just sort of like, just go through that where all of a sudden they're a co-star, then they're like, oh my God, and I'm now a series regular. Or what's also interesting is I've seen people get to the sort of cycle where they're testing for pilots. I know so many people where they just like would just test for pilot after pilot after pilot, but the pilots wouldn't get picked up. And then finally, what happens? My situation was that I came out of school and I just was just really living in the guest star recurring land for so long. It was just like, oh my God, am I ever going to become a series regular? Which was, such a dream of mine. And I think the important story that I always like to tell people about it is I remember when I got the call that I booked the morning show, I was in Watts. In the city of Watts, because the theater company that I am artistic director of, we were doing an important show called Gunshot Medley, directed by Deanna Michelle Daniel. And I was already full. I was full from doing that. And that's what I'm talking about, just telling stories that are important to you. I was literally hanging a projector on the ceiling of, and I got the phone call that I booked the morning show, and I was on top of the ladder. And so everyone's around me and they heard me get the phone call and I was like, what? What? You kidding me? And then when I was done with the phone call, everybody was looking up at me and my buddy Bruce Lemon, who was there, he looked at me up in the ladder. He said, Deshaun, I'm gonna have you just put the projector down, give it to me, come down the ladder.
Yeah, I was like, I hope you didn't fall off the
But yeah, and it was just so a welcome surprise. It was just sort of, it's one of those things where it's like I was putting my energy and time in other places that fulfilled me. And then all of a sudden, I had this audition. I went in and I met, the amazing creators of the show. I love the creators of the show. I love Carrie Aaron, who's the showrunner, Mimi Leader, who's the executive director on the show. I went in and I showed them my work and they responded and I walked out of the room to do something else that I was gloriously involved in and I wasn't like all caught up in it and then all of a sudden I got this experience to be on this show that has been life-changing.
Wow, that's amazing. Congratulations. That's huge.
Thank you.
You're
Thank you.
welcome. So, has it been, what has the transition been like for you? Because, like you were saying, like there's those tiers, the co-star, the recurring, and then, the series regular. Like, was that a big transition for you? Like, what was that shift like?
It is a shift. It's a shift in terms of, a different way of working. I haven't spent that much time on television before, and so I love television, and so I feel so blessed to now be a part of that process where, especially the second season. In the second season, we shot for a year and a half with breaks and pauses because of COVID. But to get that much time on set during the pandemic was a really a blessing, because it really sort of solidified, builds your relationship with this thing. And most of my sort of personal experiences thus far with any sort of storytelling has really been in theater. But then to be able to be on, because you learn a lot by experience. I remember, everyone has their different routes to how they get trained. And one person I want to shout out to is Deara Kilpatrick. I don't know if you should get her on the show because she's amazing.
Okay. What's her name again?
Deara Kilpatrick.
Okay.
Deara is a writer and an actress, and we did a show together at the Kirk Douglas Theater a few years ago called The Royale. And her story of how she cut her teeth was interesting to me, because she said, she's like, I got trained doing 99 seat theater. I just did play after play in 99 seat theaters, right? But that's just to go to show that experience is really the best trainer of all, right? As an educator, right? Please, take my class, study with me, all that stuff. But the best way to learn is to do. And so with television, though, there's such a high barrier to entry because it costs so much to produce a television episode, but you can do the web series and all that stuff now. So I'm just saying that it was so fortunate to be able to really cut my teeth, past 2 seasons, and get that much time in front of the camera and behind the camera, and all that good stuff. So again, it's been a transformative experience in terms of, like,
Life
how else the
changing.
shift. You go. You were saying
I
something?
was just saying life changing, like you said.
Yeah. It's just life shifting. You know what I'm saying? Like, just real shift you in a completely different way. And then as far as the other changes, sometimes I'm recognized on the street and all that stuff, whatever.
Oh, there go Deshaun. Yeah, there go
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, that stuff is whatever. It just, I feel like, gives me a little bit more of a platform. People want to talk to me a little bit more. But at the end of the day, I'm still just a working actor. I got to figure out what my next project is, and want to collaborate with more people. And that is definitely something I've always known about this industry, is that we got to recreate ourselves several times in order to have a lasting career. So it's just great to have a little bit more security in the industry, but the struggle and the hustle is still, where it is, where it was before, right?
No, I was gonna ask, did this opportunity come after? Because we were talking about your job at the restaurant. Did this happen after?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Oh, okay.
Definitely. Yeah. Leaving, letting go of, I won't just say the restaurant, but letting go of the things that didn't feel like they were fulfilling me, right? So I think we oftentimes think of jobs, or that we punish ourselves by feeling like, oh, I have to do things that don't nurture me, right? I can make money doing something that nurtures me. It's possible. And so letting go of sort of like this myth that I was telling myself, that the job needs to be exhausting, and I need to be sacrificing in that. I don't know why I gave myself that story, but letting go of all of that then led me to more of a space of just doing things that were fulfilling and nurturing for me. And so I started to figure out way how to make more money doing theater in LA. Believe it or not, you can make money doing theater in LA. And I was doing a production of a play called Father Comes Home from the War by Susan Laurie Parks, over at the Taper. And I had the fortunate experience of, I was did the second half of the run for Curling Stable, for Sterling K. Brown. And Sterling did the first half of the run, and then I stepped in and did the second half of the run. And what was great is that there were all these people who were like, wanted to see this play, because it was sort of like, something at the Taper. It's like the Broadway of Los Angeles. And a couple people from the producers from the morning show saw me in that.
Wow. So that's like the full circle moment.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't that I don't think they saw it and they were like, we're gonna cast them in the show. That wasn't how it went down, but that's how they got exposed to my work.
Wow, that's amazing. It's those seeds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that seed. I love like connecting those dots, like hearing how everything kind of came together. Like you didn't, nobody knew at the time, but like later on down the line, it's like those seeds. Like what you do now, you just never know how it can impact your later, your future.
Yeah. And I think just in terms of hustle, because I feel like, I hear actors sort of look down on theater in LA all the time. I'm here to tell you, I got agents doing theater in LA. I worked with Cicely Tyson doing theater in LA. I traveled the country doing theater in LA. I made some coins doing in LA. And I had producers saw me that then led to a series regular doing theater in LA. So you could be sitting at home and just sort of moping about your life, or you could be doing a play at one of these theaters. And I recommend it 100% because it was a huge part of my strategy and how I was able to level up.
Nice. And you have a theater company, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. Tell us
Yeah.
a little bit about your theater company.
So, Collaborative Artist Block, we've been in existence since 2018. Like I said, it really connects to my experience at Faith Acting Studios, which was I feel like if somebody didn't, introduce me to the work, then my life would be in a completely different place. I also 100% hate growing up in Los Angeles that if I go to Hollywood, there's like a theater on every other block. In South LA, like we ain't got no theaters, we ain't got no sort of art resources centers like that. Not that we don't have art, because we have art, believe me, the community is rich with art, but we don't have our theater spaces because of for lack of resources. And so Collaborative Artist Block for me is and also as a theater practitioner in LA, I hate when I do a play or the plays that I've done, which oftentimes are talking about racial inequity, and they ain't no black people in the audience.
Right. What's
What are we doing? What are we
the
doing? Like, if this is supposed to be edifying a particular audience, like, so it's kind of silly on some level, right? So basically the point of the theater company is for us to do that type of work, and we take it into the communities in South LA. Like when I booked the morning show, we were doing Gunshot Medley by Deanna Michelle Daniels, which is this amazing play that talked about police brutality and gun violence. And we were doing it in Watts with as a co-production between Rogue Machine Theater and Watts Village Theater, which is ran by Bruce Lemon. So that's what I was doing when I booked the morning show. So I was in that space. I was in my purpose.
I love that.
My purpose wasn't just, oh, I have an audition. I have a purpose now today, and let me have a purpose till I, get to the end of this audition. No, my purpose was continued throughout because I'd created those opportunities, and not even opportunities. I looked at it as not an opportunity. I looked at it as I looked at it as an opportunity to give back. And again, I say in that spirit, I think when you live in that spirit of sort of like act. Live your life now, how you feel you're gonna live your life when you make it. Just do it now.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. It's act as if.
Yeah,
Yeah,
just
yeah.
accept it right now. Like you're gonna make it. So what are you gonna do? Is that gonna, allow you to give more? Are you gonna go to more restaurants? Are you gonna like whatever it is that you want to do when you feel like you're gonna live, give your permission to do it now.
That's really good. That's really good. I love that. I'm really working on walking in that, like exactly what you just said. I want to live in that space more.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful, it's a be I think it makes life so much easier. Again, and it also connects back to that other thing. We're one of the most if you are in Los Angeles and you can pay your bills, and you're one of the most fortunate people on the face of the planet. Like, let's celebrate that. Let's be live in gratitude for that. And I hate when I go through my days and I can't find the joy in it. It's so frustrating when I'm in that headspace. I don't like it, so I try to, as much as I can, when I know it's happening, I, consciously just go back to the things that I'm grateful for. And I'm fortunate to say that I think, more and more, I have my tough times, I have my months, I have my weeks, I have my days, but, more and more, I am able to really appreciate just the simple things around me. And, we got one life, so I'm trying to enjoy as many of these minutes as I can.
Yeah, it's a practice, it's a perspective shift. It's a gratitude daily practice, and like training yourself to see the good, you know, because we all can choose to look at the cup as half empty. Yeah, I think half empty versus like half full, you know, like choosing to celebrate like the good things. Like you said, if you're in LA and you're able to pay your bills, that's a blessing. Like, that's a big deal. And we can't take that. We can't take these things for granted.
Yeah. Or even it's just sort of like, you know, pursuing the dream of getting the auditions.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many people who are like, I wish I was an auditioning actor in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And then there are people out here who just like are toiling at the auditions, mm-hmm. like can't see the joy of it. Like, yeah. It's sexy. You live in a sexy life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That struggle, it's a sexy struggle, just sort of like, you know, and you know, and it really is. I've come far enough to understand on a deeper level that the journey is the best part. Mm-hmm. Like, it really is. And, you know, I look back on, even from where I have so much more to go, so much more to say, so much more to do, but I look back at myself from, you know, where I was. And I would 100% say to myself, like, chill out, just enjoy it a little bit more. Like, you're going to miss those times. You're going to miss your 20s and, you know, staying up late, you know, running lines with your friends and driving each other to audition. Cause I don't do that now. Okay. I will don't call me to drive you to know. I don't live that life no more. Okay.
Yeah.
But I miss, you know, not have enjoying that or being as thrilled in what I was, how magical that time was, because I was so fixed on like, oh, I need to have what that person have, or I need to get there. It's like, no, you're living the soul of the thing right now. So enjoy it.
Yeah, that's so true. Now, you're also a teacher at an acting teacher at Graham Shields Studio.
Yes, I am I teach at Graham Shields Studios, and I also I teach at Cal State Long Beach right now. I'm always shifting sort of where I'm teaching, but teaching became a part of the equation for me as well. Talk about decolonizing arts education. Mm. A few years ago, my mentor teacher, Gregory Berger, I used to teach at the Berg Studios. He was the one who, you know, we worked together, me being one of his students for a long time. And he kept telling me, he was like, I feel like, you know, you would make a great acting teacher, coach, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, I resisted it for a long time. And, I'm so grateful that he kept pushing me to do it. And then what I found was, you know, when I entered the space, because I had so much training. I'd been training I have 3 degrees in acting at this point in time.
That's a whole nother level. That's amazing.
Yeah. And that's only a part of my training, because I'm always training.
Right.
But that's also me deciding, like, I learned at some point that I am an eternal student. Mm. So if you got something to teach, I want to be there. Like, yeah. I will take a singing class. I will take a voice class. I will take a different acting technique class. Like, I love to learn. Mm. And I think that's also because I think that is part of what the acting job is that we walk into a space to learn. I got to learn about this character. I got to learn about this world. And though it is so comfortable to decide, well, I'm just want to be an expert, so I'm going to do this one thing my whole life, and I'm just going to show up to this one place and just, you know, get comfortable. That's not as exciting for me. I understand the appeal, but it's harder, I think, to be in the vulnerable space, like to get up in front of, you know, new people all the time and, you know, learn this thing that you don't know how to do, or learn how to do it better. So I'm an eternal student in that sense. And what I did learn in terms of when I entered the, you know, acting teacher coaching space, mm-hmm. is I was intimidated by it, because all my teachers had been these old white men who spoke a certain way. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's not me. Mm-hmm. What do I have to contribute to the space? But what I learned is that me explaining things or talking about things from my perspective, that there was actually this huge gap in terms of how people wanted to hear a different perspective. And sometimes things clicked better for them when they heard it from from this younger black man who's gone through all this training. And then I've learned that I can actually be really impactful in that space. And so I've been having a lot of fun coaching and directing and teaching over the past few years. And I'm also excited about theater coming back.
I mean, also, and this as far as your theater company, that was on pause for a while too, obviously.
It wasn't on pause in the sense, well, productions have been on pause. So the theater company, we started impacting community. We weren't able to do it through storytelling as much as we wanted to, but we did a bunch of volunteer stuff, and also just supporting different charities and organizations that we think were important during the pandemic. Let me do a plug. The next thing that we're going to do, it's going to happen either end of June or July. We're doing a docu-series and conversation series called The COVID Effect. And we're just having dialogue with community members and artists about what is it going to take to move on from COVID. What do we need as black and brown folks? One of the things that we talk about is that we're always talking about the vaccine, right? Which is important. But we got a vaccine, so we know how we're going to move forward in that end. But what about all the other shit?
There's so much other stuff going on, right?
So let's have a conversation about that, because the vaccine ain't gonna fix that. So how are we gonna move on from that?
You have so much on your plate, but I love the f I like where you work from. Like you said, it's that shift of not just like I just want a book, I just want, you work from a purposeful place, and I believe that's why things have just really been abundant for you. You've had these like amazing opportunities. Your series regular, that's a big deal. Like, shout out to you for that. I'm excited just to I haven't watched The Morning Show, but I'm definitely gonna check it out because it sounds interesting. I've heard from a couple other people that the show is really good and it like pulls you in.
It's a, it's, I honestly say, I can honestly say that I would watch our show. And I'm really excited for second season as well. So you gotta get caught up before, I believe the fall. That's what they said. I think it's the fall, is when second season going to drop. Hey, it was such a delight to talk to you. I love your energy. I love the
Thank
space
you.
working from. I don't understand how you're doing all this 200 episodes and you got these kids. Like,
Man, thank you. I appreciate you. I appreciate you. I appreciate this conversation. This was great. I love how we just kind of free flowed. We went in so many different directions. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. So, where can people find you if they want to keep up with you, follow you on your journey?
The best place to check me out is on my Insta, which is Deshawn Terry. I think that's it. Yeah, Deshawn Terry. D-E. Well, you'll see in the text. And also, you can I do keep updated on my website, DeshawnTerry.com. And honestly, there are a lot of exciting things coming up that I can't talk about, but I wish I could because I'm really excited about it.
Well,
So,
we'll follow everybody follow you so when you're able to talk about it, then we can see what's going on
yes,
from your
follow me.
IG.
Cool, awesome, exciting things are coming.
Good. Well, thank you again, Deshawn K. Terry, for
That's
being
right.
here. We're going to add that K. Thank you for stopping by the Actors Lounge. I appreciate you.
Yeah, of course. And if you have returned people, in a couple years or whenever one is able to return, I'd love to have the convo again.
Oh,
Okay?
yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, you have a good rest of your day, and I will talk to you soon.
Okay. All right, you.
All
All
right,
right.
take care.
All right, bye.